You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Students, it is Saturday, December 16th, 2017. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the sunny but chilly Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. Please visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and WoolliesBlog.blogspot.com and ScreeningSandyHook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com, where we have some terrific moderators and some very astute chatters. And you will be very welcome there. I tend to state things just one time, and I think that people remember what I've said. And I've listened to a few Joe Walsh programs this week while driving to various appointments and things, and recognize that he repeats things or really emphasizes things. And now he's very professional. Well, I'm definitely not a professional, so I'm going to try and be more professional and maybe be a little bit repetitive, but not too repetitive. Today, more than any previous broadcast, I invite you to visit the schedule page. And I say this every week, and I'm sure that I say it so fast and I just run through it that probably there are a lot of people that don't know what the schedule page is. They don't visit it because I say it so fast that it just, well, just goes by. So, to visit the schedule page. And today it's more important than at any other time because I have, I have a lot of links. And I want to visit them today with you. So, just visit spingola.com. That's S. P as in Paul, INGOLA.com. And if you can do that now, just go to that site right now. Then, on the left, click the radio schedule button. And then after you do that, simply click December of this year. And you will also see that all of the programming for previous years is also there. So if you miss something or you want to backtrack and see who I've had on and what links have been included with those guests, then you have the opportunity to do that. Now, there are some links that I want to discuss and have you view while I'm discussing them. I want today's program to function as an educational platform, not exactly an enhanced virtual classroom, but more of a remote classroom in which we may both benefit. This is not going to be YouTube University, but a little more serious and immeasurably more credible than that. And we will take calls at 800-313-9443 in the third hour. And today, if you've looked at the schedule at all, we're going to be talking about Sandy Hook. It is the fifth year since that terrible, tragic event. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. On December 13th, just shortly after that event, 2013, when asked about investigating the drug issue, specifically Prozac and Ritalin, instead of focusing on gun control, Representative Betty McCollum, talking to a group of her constituents, said, and I quote, "We can't study federally. We're prohibited from studying the effects of some of the drugs that you were just talking about as it relates to people who go out and commit violent acts with guns. We're prohibited from studying that. We have an obligation to study those kinds of issues. It is prohibited from the CDC, the Centers of Disease Control, to study this. It is wrong. And that's why we need to get the lobbying effects out of the discussion." Unquote. Her remarks confirm the power of Big Pharma in Washington. It was the CDC who convened the Simpson-Wood conference to devise a consensus on the cover-up of vaccine damages. Now, it's very interesting. If you will remember our conversation with Clint Richardson, who was on last week, that he was talking about the corporations and that the United States is one big corporation. And that one big corporation has investments in a lot of other corporations so that they control many of the decisions that are made within the corporations and all of your cities, towns, states, school districts, just about everything is a corporation. So we need to keep this in mind as we go through today's lesson. So just because something is widely believed does not make it a fact. In doing research, one has to establish criteria, including but not limited to the following. Number one, where did the information come from? Is it well sourced? Number two, what is the background of the author? Number three, is the person adamantly promoting a particular theory in an effort to conceal the real culprits? Truth is not determined by majority vote or by the popularity of an idea. Everyone can have an opinion, a feeling, but opinions are not facts. They are not fact-based. They are what you feel, which has little to do with facts in many cases. Inconsistencies in a media narrative of a huge event with a large number of people is inevitable. You can find such inconsistencies in any media narrative, especially one that is mostly based on related by eyewitness testimony of highly traumatized people thrust into a totally alien situation in a small community that has never experienced such an event. The true test of a truther is when they can change their opinion based on evidence. Because I look back at some of the things that I wrote when I first started writing on the internet was in 2005. I have gone back and I have written an addendum at the top that I no longer believe some of the stuff that's in this article. You can't go back and take back things you said. It's like casting feathers in the wind. You can't go back and collect them all. And so I've just indicated that I've changed. The reason that I changed is because I'm a student. I consider myself a student, a lifelong student, and I want to learn something every day. And I want it to be fact-based. So the true test of a truther is when they can change their opinions based on evidence. And one thing about evidence, if you have to fake evidence, like with loop videos or serious inconsistencies or fabricated evidence, if you have to fake evidence of any kind for your conspiracy, doesn't it occur to you to ask yourself if you are the bad guy, or does the end, whatever that is, justify the means in your opinion? If there are two explanations for a particular occurrence, the most uncomplicated one is generally the most logical and rational explanation. The more assumptions, suppositions, speculations, and even deceptive fabrications that one proposes to make it functional, the more unlikely his slash her explanation is. The simplest answer is frequently the correct answer. And we've all heard of Occam's razor. Applying Occam's razor, what is the simplest and most logical explanation for what we were told occurred at the Sandy Hook Elementary School on December 14th, 2012? Newtown is located in Fairfield County, Connecticut. It is part of the greater Danbury metropolitan area, as well as the New York metropolitan area. It's a bedroom community. It is 1 hour, 22 minutes via I-684 North from Manhattan. In other words, it's about 73.3 miles. And so people can commute, and people do commute. Newtown was founded in 1705 and later incorporated in 1711. It's a corporation. As of the 2010 census, its population was 27,560. Now, they have a volunteer fire department because they are a small community, just less than 28,000. And the volunteer fire department has held an annual Christmas tree sale for well over a decade. And I called out there and I talked to one of the people there at the volunteer fire department. I've talked to a lot of people in Newtown. Bus drivers I've talked to. The only mortuary in town, talked to him. I've talked to a lot of people. I've talked to Shannon Hicks. Lots of people. And they started having these sales, Christmas tree sales. And they've done that for over 10 years. And did they do that? Did they arrange to have this sale starting over a decade ago just to have 26 trees ready for some kind person to buy and have decorated for the 26 victims of Sandy Hook? Of course not. And let's look at the children's family. You have to consider that 20 children, and they were 6 and 7 years old. They were first graders. That would be 40 parents, plus brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, grandparents, Cub Scout masters, piano teachers, dance teachers, doctors, dentists, ministers, church communities, remaining teachers at Sandy Hook, literally the whole town of Newtown, almost 28,000 people. Do you know how hard it is to keep a secret? It's, well, pretty impossible. It causes a lot of anxiety, stress. It's very debilitating. Keeping a secret about something really gigantic would be probably nearly impossible. Now, did all the people who attended the funerals of the victims lie? Or were the funerals staged with hundreds of actors? Many of the pre-funeral viewings had open caskets. Paul Simon of Simon and Garfunkel sang at the funeral of Vicky Soto. Was he in on a hoax? Jimmy Green, the father of Anna Grace Marquez Green, was a musician who worked with and was a close friend of Harry Connick Jr., who sang at Anna Grace's funeral. Was Harry Connick Jr. in on some kind of a major hoax? Now, speaking of funerals, now would be a good time to to look at the first link. Now, I've bless the wonderful moderator who always posts the links, because today I've switched them about right up till about a half hour before the program. So I would like you, if you would, to look at link number one and just click on that. And it's Don Hochsprung, heroin. Okay? She was a hero. So click on that, and that will bring up the people. Well, I'll bring up an article that is posted, that I just posted this morning, at screeningsandhook.net. And as you scroll down, you will see, well, first of all, you're going to see the evacuation drill that was held on October 17th of 2012. You can see all the students and teachers. And as you scroll down, you will see she was not the kind of teacher that we think of when we think of a principal. She wasn't the kind of principal that we typically think of. She wanted to make the children, encourage the children to feel comfortable around her. When I was in school, anybody that went to the principal's office was, oh my gosh, such a scary, I never did. But those that did, that must have been a very scary situation. And she didn't want that kind of an environment at her school. She dressed up. She the first picture you're going to see after the annual evacuation drill is the sock hop. And if you click on that sock hop link right beneath the picture, you will see other pictures of that particular event. She also liked to dress up as the book fairy, the Sandy Hook book fairy. And there you see her with first graders. Now she became principal at the school in 2010. And as you scroll down, you will see her. And this is from her tweets. She was a tweeter. She was really into technology. And she wanted an iPad in each of her class, and she created something called the Appy Hour, A-P-P-Y, Appy Hour, and it was a discussion to help the teachers learn how to use the best teaching applications. She made sure that all the teachers had an iPad, and what you see in this picture is an interactive board, a whiteboard, which was in all the classrooms, and those are expensive things to put in. And here she is. This was December 4th of 2012, and the teachers had gathered together for an early morning discussion about the apps. The next photo that you will see is the rehearsal for the Christmas concert, which was, this was on 12 December of, 2012, 2 days before. And this part of these children, a group of these children, along with members of the Sandy Hook, members of the Children of Newtown Choir, sang at the Super Bowl. They were fourth graders. This is where the pictures get a little bit emotional, for me anyway. U.S. Education Secretary Arne Duncan attended the funeral along with hundreds of mourners who lined up around the corner to pay their respects to the hero principal of the Newtown Massacre. Now, these pictures are all different. They're not duplicates. Hundreds of people lined up. She had an open casket for the viewing. She was dressed in a green silk dress and a black cardigan. And just look at the pictures. Were these people all paid to be there? Are they just a bunch of liars? Who staged this? It wasn't staged. It was real. All righty, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And I just want you to scroll down to the very last image on that page. Don Hochsprung. Just scroll down to the very, very last image, right above the references, the citations. That is her gravesite. And that is her daughter. This was not a staged event. Alrighty. Let's go back to the next one. The next number two is Don Hochsprung's tweets. And if you click that, you will see all the tweets that she sent out. And I think that those are very interesting. And you may or may not want to look at those at this time. But let's continue. I mentioned the people that attended the funeral. You've seen the photos of just the people that attended that one funeral. Now, the school community, when you're talking about the school community, you're talking about Sandy Hook school teachers. There were six teachers slash administrators. Mary Sherlock was the school psychologist, and Don Hochsprung was the principal. Then you had four teachers that were killed. But what about all the teachers that were left? Do you suppose that they all lied about the situation, that they would have to maintain this story that something happened? Do you think that they could do that? Do you think they would do that? Do you think they are doing that? No, I don't think so. You have to consider the Newtown Police Department, the first responders, the ambulance companies, and more ambulance companies showed up than what were really called because, quite frankly, there wasn't that great a need for ambulances because there were only three people who were transported to a hospital, two of whom died. The people who publish the connection. Well, they still do publish the connection. Okay, so let's go to number three on my list at December 2017. And that is the Sandy Hook connection. And this is compliments of Shill Murray. Now, Shill Murray, oh, bless his heart, he is one of the most amazing, amazing researchers. He has just done this fantastic job of providing so many photos. And he says it like it is. He's funny. He's so funny to read. It's really funny. Even though it's a very, very serious thing, it's just a funny thing. Anyway, what you're going to come to is a zip file. And in that zip file, you will find all of the Sandy Hook connections. Now, that was the newspaper or the school newspaper. And for 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012. Now, do you really think, honestly, that, like in 2012, oh my gosh, you can download those and look at them as you wish. But when you look at them, you will see exactly what was going on at the school. You will see all the activities. This is proof. This is proof that the school was open. I mean, who would really create all of this data? Nobody can stage all this. I'm sorry, it's just not possible. And the only proof that the hoaxers, the only thing, I don't say proof, the only thing that the hoaxers can bring forth that the school was closed is the use of the Wayback Machine. Now, the Wayback Machine was a nonprofit established, in San Francisco. And what they do, it's a web crawler, and they crawl the web, they take snapshots of various websites, and that's what they do. And then they post them at the Wayback Machine. They take them every couple of months, just whenever. However, if you don't want the web crawler to take a snapshot of your website, then you put a robotdocs.txt in your file. And all of the schools in Newtown, all of them, including the high school, had the robot.txt in their file, their online file, their website. So if we use the rationalization that the Wayback Machine, or that the schools were closed because the Wayback Machine doesn't have any photos, images of their website, then I guess all the schools were closed. So, which doesn't make sense at all. And one person, I won't say researcher, one person said that that proves that there wasn't any internet activity. Where you saw in the pictures under Don Hochsprung that there was internet activity. You could see the board, the whiteboard, the iPads. Okay, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back. This is Deanna. And I was talking about Shill Murray, and if you are on that page, the link page, Shill Murray is just a fabulous researcher, and his forte, what he started to do was to take apart a book titled Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, and he's gone through it chapter by chapter by chapter, and his research is absolutely impeccable. He doesn't speculate. He gives you facts. That's what he's, fact checking. That's what he does. And if you go through these articles that he has, and actually one of the funniest ones that I recently read, it was from last year. Wolfgang Halbig, who Shill calls an internet panhandler, Wolfgang Halbig actually offered to $1,000 for pictures of the 2012 Veterans Day celebration at the school. He said, I already have the pictures from 2011. I want the pictures from 2012, and I will be willing to pay $1,000 for them, which indicates, obviously, that school, and Wolfgang Halbig knows that the school was open in 2011 because he has the pictures from the Veterans Day celebration there. And so he said, no, I've got that for 2012 to really prove. What was he trying to prove? Anyway, he said he would pay $1,000. And so Shill provided him with the photos. Of course, Shill never got paid. And needless to say that Shill Murray is not his real name. Anybody that uses their real name, gets a lot of trouble, gets a lot of grief, whether it's lawsuits or death threats or anything. If you use your real name, and they find you, they're going to be after you. Okay, it's become a very vicious situation, and I'm not exaggerating. Alrighty, so let's get back to the all the people. Okay, so I mentioned the schools, the school community, the school teachers that were left, and there were 99. There were a lot of teachers, the school board, the people who did the PTA reports, which you can see online, the people who inspected the school and created the reports. There was no asbestos problem in the school. There was a report in the Newtown Bee that there was an asbestos problem in the high school in over the swimming pool area and in the the boys' gym, just in certain areas. Asbestos is only bad, only dangerous when it is airborne. Okay? It's not dangerous unless it is airborne. And so, the school was finished in 1954, 55, and, there's also been, somebody said, oh, well, they didn't have the right to, the right parking lanes for people with disabilities. Well, that Disabilities Act only applied to schools or facilities that were built after 1990. And because that was, the bill was passed, let's see, when was it passed? It was passed in 1992, I believe, 1991, and it only applied to buildings, new construction after that bill was passed. So schools that were already built, facilities that were already built would not go back and redo or have to change anything. So it wasn't retroactive. So that's one of those things. Okay. You also have to consider, okay, the school, the school inspectors, the bus drivers. I talked to the main bus driver that went to Sandy Hook, that drove children to Sandy Hook Elementary School. And of course, we mentioned the principal already, the school psychologist, and the four teachers who were killed that day. Are the remaining teachers liars and just covering up a hoax? You also have to consider the hospital personnel. The medical examiner's office, he, four doctors, 10 other staff members, and a college intern took care of the bodies of the murdered children. How about the Department of Motor Vehicles? Did they participate with phony registrations and license plates? There were dozens of officers from the Connecticut State Police. There was the Newtown Bee, who was publishing articles throughout that period from 2008 through 2012. In fact, there was one article that they mentioned Adam Lanza in when he was playing softball or baseball and mentioned him. And there were also adjacent newspapers. So are the writers, the photographers who apparently printed articles about Sandy Hook Elementary School during the time that some claim the school was closed, are they all liars? Is the office of the Connecticut Commissioner of Education, are they all liars? How about the hundreds of pictures taken at the time, at the time during which it was supposedly closed? And this is where Schilmer has really made, it's wonderful. If you click on 101 more photos from Sandy Hook Elementary School, and you can scroll down and you can see he's got dates and then he has links, and there are pictures of Halloween in 2009. And also I'm going to show you how to look at these pictures and look at them for yourselves. Okay, there's one, this one, if you scroll down, you will see, the trees on October 31st or around Halloween. They're very orange. And then you go down the next picture, in December, where you see the tent, and you see that the trees are, well, they're all leafless. It's December. The only tree that's green is the one right in the middle of that picture. So anyway, you can really tell the difference. But all of these photos and hundreds more are available, through his website, and his work is just amazing. I can't say enough good things about his work. Alrighty. Let's see. What I want to do, go to number 7. Photos from the Newtown Bee. And this is from 2010. And I want to show you, this will bring up a bunch of photos, and you just use the marks at the left or the right to go forward. And if you go down into the right-hand corner, And if I'm going too fast, somebody in the chat room, please tell me. You go down to the right-hand corner. There's a little round icon down there. And if you hover, it'll say info. And you just click that icon, and it will tell you the date taken right down there at the bottom. It was taken October 28th, 2010. And this is at the Sandy Hook Elementary School. Okay? And you can check each photo for yourself. And there's a bunch of photos there of activities at the school. And down in the left-hand corner, it tells you who the people are that are in the picture and tells you what they're doing and the date they did it on. And these are, if you click on the picture or the little round icon in the right-hand corner, it will tell you the date that the photo was taken. Okay, so the school wasn't closed. It's a fabrication. It's a lie, if you will. A deception. A lie. Lie. No getting around it. A lie is a lie. Okay. Alrighty. So, we have all these people involved, and you have the dozens of officers from the Connecticut State Police, the Newtown Bee, whose few pictures we just saw. You have other newspapers, the writers, the photographers, hundreds of pictures. And the one thing about the report, the official report, 7,000, it's just under 7,000 pages. And in that report, there are hundreds of pictures of inside the school. You can see blood. You can see blood on the floor. You can see blood trailing out the front. You can see Sherlock's body. And it's a pretty sad thing. So when, and these are all available. But the problem is, even though they're available online, the hoaxers rely on you not looking for that kind of proof. Because when people believe that they have the truth, they're not going to continue to look for it. The hoaxers are similar to drug companies. They hope you will listen to the message and not look at the black box warning or read about how one SSRI, Prozac, has caused the death of 50,000 people since it was introduced. The total number of patients that participated in the clinical trial was 286 people for a period of 6 weeks. And then they put it out on the market. And since then, 50,000 people have suicided or otherwise died. Were all the people above, all those people that I mentioned, were they just a bunch of liars and participants in a gigantic hoax? Or did Adam Lanza commit the most horrendous act imaginable? Were the 7,000 pages of the Connecticut State Police report, the witnesses, the search warrants, and written reports, the hundreds of images in the report, the video and aerial images of the report, and all the detectives, photographers, crime scene investigators, all liars? Okay, there's another link that I'd like you to look at. Look at number 6. Seized from the Lanza house. Now, I've done a couple, probably just one. I'm working on another one about the Lanza house. There's several things about the Lanza house. But Adam Powell and Kelly Watt claimed that the Lanza house was staged for the purpose of perpetrating a hoax. Did those who reportedly staged the house plant all of the following items? Were the search warrants all fraudulent documents? The only fraud that is being perpetrated is by the hoaxers. And you can view all of the search warrants here. Okay, there's 5 links. And then you can see the long list of the things that were related to guns, violence. You can see them listed. And thanks to Metabunk for providing this list and for hosting the PDF files. And each PDF file is about 15 pages. Now, do you really think that, Alan Powell and Kelly Watt, said that it took them 2 days to stage the house. No. This was a lived-in house. People live there. There's so much evidence, and I'm overwhelmed by all of the evidence within the house that characterizes the occupants of that house. Which I will write about later. But anyway, if this is very interesting. This isn't staged. My gosh. My gosh. Okay. Let's see. Now, let's talk a little bit about Adam Lanza. Adam Lanza. He's born April 22nd, 1992 at Executor Hospital in New Hampshire. There was a picture in the local newspaper of his birth picture. His mother, his older brother Ryan was born in 1988, so he was almost 4. Now, Adam Lanza was born C-section. Now, when a child is born C-section, they just immediately clamp off the umbilical cord right away. And the cord blood that the child needs in his brain, the cord blood, it's his. It's about 1/3 of what he should have. He doesn't get it. They sell it. They put it in the cord blood bank and sell it. And so he was born C-section. 8 days after he was born, he quit breathing, and they took him back to the hospital. He quit breathing, then he got revived, but they took him back to the hospital. And he was, according to his records and according to just research, educated people are typically more apt to vaccinate their children than people who are not educated. Now that, or I should say maybe indoctrinated, but he was more than likely fully vaccinated. The CDC website admits that vaccine makers use aluminum, animal tissue or blood, aborted fetal tissue, antifreeze, formaldehyde, and mercury. When mercury enters the bloodstream, it damages the heart, brain, kidneys, lungs, and immune system. Adam Lanza had chronic laxative dependent constipation. Okay, be back in 3 minutes. Back, this is Deanna. Welcome back. Alrighty, I was talking about Adam Lanza. He was, and I just mentioned some of the things that were in vaccines. And just prior to his birth, the CDC went into overdrive with their vaccine schedule. And they added hepatitis B, although it was not mandatory. It was not part of the schedule as mandatory at birth in New Hampshire until 2005. Yes, I did talk to the Department of Health and Human Services in New Hampshire. I check out all this stuff. I don't just take anybody's word for it. for anything. Anyway, Adam Lanza had chronic laxative dependent constipation for most of his life, which is often associated with the MMR vaccination. He was also socially unresponsive. He did not talk until he was 3. He was a head banger. He would sit and bang his head against the wall. And I think that there are children that do this as a result of vaccine damages. It must be the most awful thing for parents to experience. Now, according to the OCA report, by early April 1997, now he's born 1992, April, so he'd be just 5, Lanza was an extremely active young child who exhibited many behavioral rituals. He had neurological development evaluation. He never slept through the night. He continued to make up his own language. He reportedly did not like to be held, kissed, or hugged. He also had severe temper tantrums and used to sit, as I mentioned, and hit his head repeatedly. In the fall of 1997, the school district conducted an occupational therapy consultation and found that Lanza displayed inconsistent eye contact and scattered motor skills, quote unquote. He experienced seizures in early childhood with no indication of epilepsy. He had delayed fine and gross motor skills in his preschool years. He engaged in repetitive behaviors, such as washing his hands. He had a lack of participation in groups. He didn't want to be, he was a loner. He isolated himself. He had sensitivity to smells and intolerance of touch and certain textures. And again, hit his head repeatedly. He attended kindergarten in Kingston, which is in New Hampshire, where the teachers developed a special program to meet the needs of this withdrawn child. He learned to shoot. We're going to our top of the hour break here. So we'll pick this up on the other side of the break.
Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. And we are talking today about Sandy Hook. And we're talking about, specifically right now, we are talking about Adam Lanza. He learned to shoot a Ruger with his mother and her friend, Marvin LaFontaine, when he was 4. He owned a lightweight aluminum Ruger 10/22, which he used to shoot at paper bullseyes and other shapes. And the booklet, the instruction manual for this particular gun was in his mother's closet, during the first, when they were going through, when the crime scene investigators started, the first thing that they do, they go through, they photograph everything. Everything is photographed immediately as it sits. Nothing has moved, nothing has changed. They photograph everything. And then after they get it documented, and they did this both with video and with photographs, and there's a backup photographer. So, and then they start tearing things apart. Okay. Anyway, so he learned to shoot this gun. And there were other things. He did learn to shoot early, and people said, oh, he couldn't have done that. He didn't have the wherewithal. He had Asperger's, and, he just couldn't do it. But yes, he could, because, he was amazing as far as he spent hours and hours, on violent games. And that's, which we'll talk about. Anyway, so he, as I mentioned before, he had a hypersensitivity to physical touch. His mother even had to remove the tags from his clothing. Now, by the age of six, because his parents did take him to doctors, they did believe in the allopathic medical system. And he did have a pediatrician, and most likely by the time he was six, he was probably on Ritalin, because he would be very hyper, very active, very talkative, and then there would be just a big slump, very quiet. And he had very serious issues by the time he was six, and I believe that he was probably prescribed Ritalin at that time. And it's a very sad thing, because people who are prescribed one psychiatric drug often end up taking more. As I mentioned, he had obsessive, repetitive, rituals, obsessive hand washing. In New Hampshire, his doctor, probably the pediatrician, diagnosed him with a sensory integration disorder. He received speech therapy and occupational therapy in kindergarten and first grade. Now, in the images of the first walkthrough of the house, when Alan Powell and Kelly Watt were saying that they fixed up the house to make it look like a mentally ill person lives there, but they never mentioned the black plastic over the windows. Now, Prozac causes light sensitivity. And if you look at the transcripts of the hearings, such as the 1991 Prozac hearing, you will see that there is a lot of evidence of violence and suicide by patients taking Prozac. Yes, you look at the transcripts of hearings. You don't look at a YouTube video. And I'm sure that many people recall the singer, Del Shannon. And he was very anxious. His career was going really well. And then he decided that he was feeling so anxious, and his wife said, oh, why don't you talk to your doctor? And you don't have to go to a psychiatrist a psychologist cannot prescribe drugs. You have to go to a psychiatrist. But your regular doctor can prescribe drugs. And so Del Shannon went to see his doctor, and he was on Prozac for 6 days before he killed himself. And this is something he would never have done, because he felt that suicide was a permanent solution for a temporary problem. And his wife testified at the 1991 Prozac hearing. And one of the big things that Del Shannon experienced was light sensitivity. And so when you see the images in the police report of Adam Lanza's bedroom. You'll see the black plastic up. And he put that up about when he was 10 or 11. And so I do believe that he was probably taking Prozac. Now, in the fifth grade, when he was about 10, he wrote something called The Big Book of Granny about violent homicide. And this was also when Peter Lanza noticed a big difference in his son, particularly by the age of 11. He apparently continued the violent ideation because his seventh grade teacher in the spring of 2005 told investigators on January 5th, 2013, that his creative writing was so graphic that it could not be shared with the class. She approached the principal about this issue. Adam Lanza was vegan by age 13. He ate a lot of soy products, especially edamame. And in the photos of the house, I've got so many photos downloaded, and you can download the entire report, but it's also available, a lot of it is available online, and there's a link on the schedule page. But he was a vegan by the age of 13. And we do know that soy and soy products can cause a disruption, and really change your, almost change your DNA, which I believe, he had an interest in pedophilia. So this might be an issue, and maybe a causation, but that's speculation. I'm not going to say that that's what caused it. I'm just saying that it can cause it. Now, Nancy Lanza took Adam to the Danbury Emergency Room in the fall of 2005. 2005 seemed to be a crucial year. He had been suffering extreme anxiety for several days. This could have been drug-induced, drug-related. It was also about the time that he had trouble concentrating. He gave up playing the saxophone. He stopped playing outside. He stopped climbing trees. He stopped making, it even got worse with the eye contact situation. He developed a stiff, limbering gait. He began having panic attacks and crying spells, while loud noises, bright lights, or sudden change made him non-responsive and withdrawn. Now, he had always had temper tantrums, but they just increased. Now it became panic attacks. Did he withdraw from an SSRI before the mass murders? Now, that's a question that some people have asked. If so, did it cause him to develop akathisia? Perhaps this is evidenced by his addiction to Dance Dance Revolution. And this is a game where you get on a platform. Now, you have to have a lot of stamina. And one of the first things that people said about Adam Lanza was that, oh, he was so frail. He could never have carried any those guns, and he couldn't have done this, and he couldn't have done that. Not so. He was very skinny. He was tall, very skinny. But he played Dance Dance Revolution. And he also had a home version of Dance Dance Revolution. So what you do is you stand on a platform and you watch this video and you follow you put your feet where the video tells you, where the light lights up or something. I've never been that close to the game. And he would play this game for 6 to 10 hours. The average person, would they be able to play that long? It's like playing tennis for 10 hours or something. And the issue with akathisia is that you feel like you have to keep moving your feet. And so the Dance Dance Revolution game would accommodate that need to keep moving your feet. Now, Ellen O'Toole said that it's quite possible that Adam Lanza, in order to feel totally in control, may have stopped taking an SSRI a month or so before the mass murders. And she is an FBI profiler, and I've talked about her in my book. But we need to look at the details of his room. He also, in his closet, he only wore, except for the when he went to the school, he typically wore a blue shirt and tan pants. And his wardrobe, that's what you see, is tan pants and blue shirts. So whoever Alan Powell and Kelly Watt thinks staged the house, how did they decide to put all tan pants and blue shirts? How did they decide to put a home version of Dance Dance Revolution in the office? They had to have some correlation, some knowledge. Nobody staged the house. But they couldn't rationalize those things and didn't even mention them. They just said, oh, he didn't have a blackboard, and he didn't have an animal. He didn't have this or that. He didn't have a hamster. Well, he had guns. He wasn't interested in hamsters and blackboards. He had guns, as you can see from the list that I provided on the website, thanks to MetaBunk. He was interested in guns, had been interested in guns since the age of 4. He played violent games, and he spent hours, as I said, playing this very strenuous game, Dance Dance Revolution. He was obsessed with mass shootings, especially Columbine. He belonged to 2 internet forums dedicated to mass shootings. Okay, let's go back to my website, and I would like you to click on number 8, Sandy Hook Lighthouse. Just click on 8. And Reed Coleman is the writer. He's done so much work on the online profile that Adam Lanza established. He is another wonderful, wonderful researcher, has done excellent work. And he talks about the Big Book of Granny, which he says was created during an important juncture in the Sandy Hook shooter's life. And he talks about Canebread, which is one of the names that he used and also Smiggles when he was active on the Columbine Forum from early 2010 to February of 2012. And so you can read all of these things. You can read about Lanza's Wikipedia account, and just scroll down. There is so much information here. It is all factual. There's no speculation. It is all factual. All of it. You're not going to be able to put holes in it, tear holes in it, and say, oh, that's not true. But the hoaxers don't want you to know about this. He had a spreadsheet. He was really, really into mass murder. Okay? All you have to do, just research these things. Research the official report. Remember, it's the official report. And what happens, now the official report is important, but not as important as the commission that is convened following an event. And you can think back about the Warren Commission, the Roberts Commission, the 9/11 Commission. The commission is where they decide what they want the public to believe and what they want the public to do, and the recommendations that they make as a result of the incident. That's where things get kind of skewed. Okay? So you need to really keep that in mind. So Adam Lanza, in fact, one of the readers, one of the listeners emailed me, just a little bit before the program, or earlier this morning, and said that, let me share this email with you. He said that, the National Enquirer, he said, I just saw this appear on the National Enquirer site about Adam Lanza. I was going to go through all 7 pages and do a copy and paste, but for some reason the browser would not let me do that. I guess they want people to actually go to their site and be bombarded with all the pop-up ads, etc. And Deanna, as you might recall, Mike did an article and a few podcasts where he mentioned the intelligence community connection to the National Enquirer. And anyway, what they were saying, what the headline was, Adam Lanza, school shooter's mom, turned to booze to avoid her son. That is absolutely not the case. She was literally a prisoner, well, not literally, but figuratively, a prisoner in her own home. It was a very, very sad thing. That she was just, her whole life was devoted to her boys, and Ryan had gone off to school, and anybody that's going to take the labels off their children's clothes and make sure that they have everything they need, and her life was just wrapped around Adam. It was just an amazing situation, and the doctor, one of the doctors, I believe it was Dr. King at Yale Children's Study, that said that you're a prisoner in your own home because Adam is running it, and I think that is the case. He was in charge, and if he threw a tantrum, well, everything stopped and. And that was it. And I believe that she attempted to do everything that she could. I think it was very unwise of her to have guns in the house, obviously. But that was a love that she had. She grew up in a family of one sister and 2 or 3 brothers. And they grew up in, on a farm. They had chickens. She knew how to butcher chickens and do all of that stuff. She hunted. So it was a love that she had that she was simply attempting to share with her sons. And obviously it worked out very, very terribly. Okay, I think we're going to a quick 3-minute break and we'll be right back and we will talk a little bit more about his background, what happened. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we're talking about Adam Lanza. And we talked about how slender he was and very, very thin. But he participated in very, very strenuous activity of Dance Dance Revolution. Now, let's talk a little bit about the guns. Lanza taped together 2 magazines for a total of 60 consecutive bullets in each magazine in the Bushmaster XM15223. Now, this weighed 7 pounds, and that is what he used to slaughter the children. He also carried into the school 2 handguns, a Sig Sauer P226 9mm, which weighed 2.15 pounds, and a Glock 20SF 10mm for 1.72 pounds, for a total of 10.87 pounds. He had ammunition, 233 ammo, 301 rounds, which equaled 8.0 pounds, 9mm ammo, 116 rounds, which amounted to 3.05 pounds, and 10mm ammo, 90 rounds, which equaled 3.37 pounds. Altogether, the guns and the ammo weighed 25.36 pounds. He did not have any armored, he had a green vest on with a lot of pockets. He didn't wear any protective gear. He had fingerless gloves on. He had earplugs. He had a hat. He had suspenders. And he had a belt with a holster so that the weight was evenly distributed. He wasn't going to do 10 miles with this. He was getting out of his car, walking into the school. It was doable. Okay, so what his fascination, as I mentioned before, he belonged to two internet forums dedicated to mass shootings, which you can read about at Sandy Hook Lighthouse by Reed Coleman. He played violent video games such as World of Warcraft. He had a shooting range in the basement. Through tantrums, the last tantrum that he had was a few days before 12/14. He had a GPS on his car, which showed he visited the school the day before at the same time that he arrived on 12/15. He had terminated contact with his father and brother over 2 years before. He cut off all contact with his aunts, uncles, and cousins. He isolated himself within the confines of his home and primarily communicated with his mother via email, even though they lived in the same house. He quit school and took a GED test as he could not handle the commotion of changing classes and all of the other changes. As of April 2014, let me give you some figures. The number of people taking psychiatric drugs in the United States is as follows by April 2014. ADHD drugs, 10,291,860. Antidepressants, 41,226,394. Antipsychotics, 6,845,303. Anti-anxiety, 36,472,663. It amounts to 78,694,222. Now, these drugs are given to infants. It is amazing to me that any parent would give their child Prozac because a doctor prescribed it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Tiana, and we are talking about Sandy Hook. We're talking about Adam Lanza. And just before the break, I was talking about the fact that there are parents who will give their child Prozac to a 6-month-old infant simply because their doctor prescribed it. And if their doctor, who is an authority figure, prescribes it, then the parent caves. I don't understand why anybody would do that. I wouldn't take anything without well, I don't take anything, Ashley. You have to look up every prescription and find out what the heck it does. Every single drug that is created will kill at least half the people that take it. If you read Dr. Jennifer Daniels in her book about this, you have to know what you're taking. It's your body. Just because some guy with a stethoscope around his neck and a white jacket on says you should take something doesn't mean you should take it. You own your body despite the Affordable Health Care Act. You do not need to take anything, and you should not take anything until you investigate what it is, what the side effects, if there is some alternative thing you could take for the very to get rid of whatever it is you're trying to get rid of, or make better whatever it is that is wrong. Look for alternative ways. Trust yourself. Trust your own intuition. Think about this. It's imperative. Okay. In the final report, State's Attorney Stephen J. Sedensky said, why did the shooter murder 27 people, including 20 children? Unfortunately, that question may never be answered conclusively. On the contrary, I believe that there are very concrete and conclusive reasons for Adam Lanza's behavior. There was a petition on the White House website in December 2012 to formally investigate the link between psychopharmaceutical products and violence. Without explanation, someone removed it when it had acquired almost the requisite number of signatures. Perhaps the government is deliberately suppressing research into the correlation between psychiatric drugs and mass shootings. Able Child co-founder Sheila Matthews, who I've had on the program, sent a hand-delivered 4-page comprehensive letter dated March 5th, 2013 to Dr. H. Wayne Carver, Connecticut's chief medical examiner, requesting the release of the autopsy, toxicology, and prescription drug history records of Adam Lanza. On April 4th, Abel Child and Jonathan W. Emord, who I've also had on the program, filed a 26-page appeal using the Connecticut Freedom of Information Commission to obtain the records. Abel Child cited 31 acts of violence, including at least 14 school shootings that were committed by individuals taking or withdrawing from psychiatric drugs, which resulted in 162 wounded and 72 deaths. Between 2004 and 2011, there were nearly 13,000 reports to the FDA's MedWatch system that psychiatric drugs had possibly caused violent side effects, including homicide, mania, and aggressive behavior. 22 international drug regulatory warnings have been issued on psychiatric drugs, including violent behavior, mania, psychosis, and homicidal ideation. The FDA, America's purported drug watchdog, has ignored the devastating toxicity of the antipsychotic drugs and has unleashed a pandemic on America. Now keep in mind that any of your ABC agencies, the government's ABC agencies, are strictly for the protection of the corporations. Keep in mind also that the government invests big money into those corporations. Matthews and Emord's request for Lanza's toxicology report prompted the FOIC hearing. Abel Child versus the State of Connecticut Office of the Chief Medical Examiner on August 22, 2013. Officials acknowledged that they had confiscated medical records from the Lanza home, but steadfastly refused to make them public. Connecticut Assistant Attorney General, a law school graduate in 1986 and a lawyer in Connecticut since 1988, has been one of the many assistant attorney generals since at least June 23rd, 1993. I called the Attorney General's office to ask about the number of assistant attorney generals in Connecticut. And I had a wonderful chat with the lady who answered the phone, and she said there were about 200. 200 assistant attorney generals. According to the Connecticut State Register and Manual of 1998 and 2003, there were 20 assistant attorney generals working exclusively in the state's Department of Health and Human Services. Now, who do you think they're working with? Could it be that they're working with the federal Department of Health and Human Services? These people are there to protect the butts of Big Pharma. Okay? That is their prime responsibility, protecting the butts of Big Pharma. Now, during the hearing with Matthews and Emord, Patrick Kwanishi, representing Connecticut, he's one of the 20, representing Connecticut's Department of Health and Human Services, rationalized the state's refusal to release Lanza's medical records and toxicology report. He said, I won't tell you everything he said, but he said, it is harmful because then you can cause a lot of people to stop taking their medications, stop cooperating with their treating physicians just because of the heinousness of what Adam Lanza did, unquote. Forget about the children being slaughtered. Forget about the suicidal ideation. Forget about the 50,000 people who have died as a result of taking Prozac since its release. We got to protect those people. We got to protect those corporations. We can't get those people to stop taking their medications and start asking questions. We got to protect them. That is what the Assistant Attorney General, who works specifically with the state's Department of Health and Human Services, said, hey, we don't want to stop other people from taking their medications. It constitutes an admission that Lanza was on psychiatric drugs, most likely on SSRI drugs, particularly because he had every one of the symptoms of people who are on SSRI drugs. Oh, I get so angry. I just get, well, you know me. Okay, again, I ask, were all the families, funeral directors, church officials, all the people that we've talked about before, were all these people liars and participants in a giant hoax? Or did Adam Lanza commit the most horrendous act imaginable? Were the 7,000 pages of the Connecticut State Police report, the witnesses, the search warrants, the written reports, the hundreds of images in the reports, the video and the aerial images of the report, and all the detectives, photographers, crime scene investigators, all liars, were all those pictures taken at the school between 2008 and 2012, were all those photoshopped? Applying Occam's razor, what is the simplest and most logical explanation for what we were told occurred at the Sandy Hook Elementary School on December 14th, 2012? What do you think? What do you think? Okay, let's go back to some of the links. Well, let me give you some figures. From the DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. The following has occurred. Number one, doctors have diagnosed and prescribed dangerous, addictive, mind-altering, suicide, and violence-inducing drugs to 20 million children worldwide. Over 150 million people worldwide have taken selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, SSRI, antidepressants with annual sales totaling almost $20 billion. Fabricated DSM disorders masquerading as diseases have generated increased international mental health budgets. In the United States, the budget for mental health rose from $33 billion in 1993 to over $100 billion within 10 years. Mental health costs have increased the deficits of numerous countries. Are your roads falling apart? What do you think? Are the bridges falling down in your community? It's because so much money is going to allopathic medicine that the states, counties don't have the money, the funds to take care of infrastructure. I cover that in my book. Anyway, let's go back to some of the links and let's talk about some of the people that I have written about. And then we'll open the phone lines after a bit and you can call in and, we can chat about this. Alrighty. We have J.B. Nicholas photos. Now this was a journalist. And if you visit his website, on the link, you will see that he managed to get some photos, nighttime photos of bodies being taken from the school to the, they were initially taken to the autopsy tent. The autopsy tent was set up. And one of the crazy things that that Alan Powell was saying, Alan Powell and Kelly Watt, they said that that they staged the school as a prop, and they did this in October, and that Meyer Van Lines is the ones that came in and did the staging, and they set everything up in October. But there are photos that I have online and that Shel Murray has online, and it shows that the Meyer truck was there at the very exact same time as the autopsy tent. So does that mean that they were setting up the school as a prop after the fact? When you pick and choose, cherry pick photos from the reports, and most of the photos that they used, most of the images that Kelly Watt and Alan Powell used, were at the end. So they had to go through an awful lot of photos to get to the end ones where it shows all the clutter out in the hallway. Well, that's because they were getting everything out of the rooms. They were moving them over to Chalk Hill School because all the children were going to be transferring over to Chalk Hill School when they went back to school, and they wanted to replicate. They took pictures of the classrooms as they stood so that they would feel comfortable. Imagine we talked about the teachers, but imagine these remaining students, over 400. I think there were 458 registered that day, registered in December 2012. They would have to live with this. They would have to say it was a hoax. No parent would ask that. They would have to live a lie for the rest of their lives. Oh my gosh, it's obscene. It's ridiculous to even consider it. Okay, so if you look at J.B. Nicholas photos, you'll find these photos and what his experience in taking these photos, which was an incredible thing that he did, and he said it's the most important thing that he did in his whole career. That is what he is most proud of, and I think he did a good thing. Although I know. See, there's belief and there's no. I've done the research. Hours. I've spent some days from the time I get up in the morning until I go to bed at night. And when I initially started looking at Sandy Hook, I was told that I didn't know the material, and so this one particular person was not going to be on my program because I didn't know the material. I thought, well, I better find out what the material is. And when I started looking at the material was full of inconsistencies, looped video, just a lot of garbage, nothing concrete, nothing, it felt wrong, it looked wrong. I'm a big person in footnoting things, and I've talked about primary and secondary sources. Secondary sources are, hearsay, a lot of hearsay. It's compiled. It's something that somebody made up and compiled together. And when somebody compiles something together, oftentimes you don't know who did it. There's no sources. There's eerie music and irrelevant stuff, and they never really get to the point, and you don't know where they got their information to begin with. Primary sources are records that were created at the time of the event. And in the case of Sandy Hook, this would be the Connecticut State Police documents. And as I said, the documents are created by dozens and dozens and dozens of people. They're not going to get together and have a meeting. And we're talking 7,000 pages. Okay, we're going to a break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. This is Deanna. And let me clarify one thing. I mentioned earlier the ammunition that Adam Lanza was carrying, and I said 233 ammo, should have been 223 caliber, and he returned to the school on 12/14. The day before, he had gone to the school at the same time that he returned the next day on 12/14, according to his GPS. There's a question here. Adam Lanza's medical records were, this is a comment from the chat room. Adam Lanza's medical records were eventually disclosed and showed he wasn't on antidepressant medication. If this were the case, why the lame excuse of not disclosing his records for fear it would discourage others from taking them? Drug awareness, and this was disclosed where? Now, as I mentioned, Ellen O'Toole, who is an FBI profiler, said that he probably went off any drugs that he was taking at least a month before. Now, the question, I do not believe that they were ever fully revealed or disclosed, because what was revealed is that the medical examiner said that he was not on any narcotic drugs, meaning illegal drugs. But anything that was prescribed would not have been considered a drug that shouldn't have been there. So I think you'd have to, you know, we'd have to look into that further. But anyway, okay, let's get back to some of the links on my page. Let's talk about number 10. I did this article some time back, and then I remembered that I had access to a deposition that I had downloaded some time back. It was 220 pages, and I read it, all of it. I kind of scanned it before, but I thought, I need to look at this better. I need to really look at it, get this, you know, more detail. And so I read it. And so if you would like to click on that link, and the name of the article is Wolfgang Halbig, Psych, Drugs, and Court Cases. And initially, it was published August 11th, and then I, 2016, and then I updated it. We will take calls in the next hour. So anyway, Wolfgang Halbig brought a suit against the city of Apopka, and he actually won this case. He got $25,000, and he had a slip and fall, he said. Okay, we'll pick this up on the other side. Be right back.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All righty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we were looking at an article that I wrote last year and that I redid and refined it and put more detail into it. And it appears that he said he suffered a trip and fall on or about January 26, 2010 in the Errol Estates community in which he then lived. Okay, so we got $25,000. We do have a caller. Let's take the caller, and then we'll get back to the article. Russell in Minnesota. Yes, Russell in Minnesota.
I understand Wolfgang Halbig also has a pending lawsuit against the city of Newtown, claiming that he slipped and fell coming out of one of the porta potties, that he had a slip and fall coming out of one of the porta potties.
You're just being silly. I know that sometimes you do really funny things, but he did have a porta potty obsession. He should have been asking what drugs was Adam Lanz on. Instead, he was asking about the porta potties. And in any mass casualty incident, you're always going to have a non-government organization, who is going to provide porta potties. They're going to provide water. It's what communities do. That's what they did in Columbine. So anyway, that's funny. I wouldn't put it past him to do something like that. He certainly is litigious. Yes?
I heard one observer say that they had seen Wolfgang coming and tripped as he exited one of the porta potties. And then 2 minutes later, Tim Fetzer came walking out of that same porta potty.
Oh, naughty, Russ.
But I do have a serious question.
Okay,
I was listening to, Rick Adams today, the, Truth Avenger, whatever they call him. He was saying, and he was using the term today, Sandy Hoax. He was referring to the Sandy Hoax. He says that they have blood bags. Have you heard anything about these blood bags? Rick Adams claims that they're using these, but I asked him, is this ketchup they're using? He said, no, it's blood bags. Now,
for what?
He said all of these mass shootings, they ship in blood bags to make it appear as though.
And what is his source for that?
I don't know. I was wondering, do you happen to, where does he get this information?
Hal Bigg said in one of his, many, many radio interviews, that there were 50 to 60 gallons of blood that had to be cleaned up. And given the number of people that were killed, that's absolutely outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. And Clean Harbors is the one that came in and cleaned it up. That's what they do. That's what they do. But 50 to 60 gallons, I think the average adult has, what, a quart and a half of blood, and there were 26 that were dead, and they certainly didn't all bleed out every drop. Oh, he is just, has his figures wrong, but he's got.
I mean, I understand how big, is, but when you get to a guy like Rick Adams, you know, who, I'm curious what makes his point of view so popular. You know, on RBN,
When you hear something repeatedly, and people want to belong to the consensus group. When a child is in a classroom and they have a different view than the 20 other students or the 25 other students, they're very reticent to raise their hand and say, I disagree. People are herd animals. We've been trained, indoctrinated, brainwashed in our government schools to all think alike. And so even though there are radio broadcasters who promote this stuff, with everything, you must look at their sources. And if you cannot cite sources, then you have to look at where the information is coming from. Rick Adams is a very nice person. Most of the people who are hoaxers the majority of the followers of the top hoaxers are incredibly nice, intelligent people. But they get swept away. Because if you only look at one side, if all I did all day was look at YouTube University videos and read crazy books that don't have sources, I would have fallen for that too. But I think that you really have to look at who's putting this garbage out. You have to look at the sources. And I do have an advantage because I was a researcher, a genealogical family history researcher for so many years that I learned how to do research in libraries using microfiche. I had a microfiche here in my house, and that's what I did. I learned how to do primary research. Most people simply do not know how to do research, and they just go along with other people's conclusions, especially when those other people claim to have credentials. It just, well, like the doctor who gives a prescription to a mother for her infant child to be on Prozac, the mother might go ahead and do that because that guy has a white coat on. He's an authority figure. So when somebody comes along talking about his credentials and seeming to have all this experience, and he's a nice guy, and they appeal to the emotion. There's one fellow that says, oh, why didn't they rush those little bodies out of there? And they just appeal to emotion. They appeal to your sense of outrage and emotion. You say, well, if you were a parent and your child was in that school, wouldn't you just run in there and tear that school down and go through the doors? No. No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
Wolfgang Albig said, according to everything he's seen with his extensive law enforcement background, that he would have seen that those parents would have broken the glass of the doors and broken into that building.
Well,
he's got years and years of extensive law enforcement.
We're going to cover that. I'm going to cover that with this article. He didn't make it past a probationary period as a state trooper. He didn't make it past.
You might have to get a real law enforcement expert like Chris from Las Vegas to come on and talk
about
it.
I did have an expert come on, and he said that Halbig said that he was a customs agent. You have to go through the same kind of training to be a customs agent as you do to be a state trooper. It's just crazy. When you put the timeline, Wolfgang Halbig timeline together, we're going to cover that right now. We're going to cover that. So thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, now back to this article, Wolfgang Halbig, Psych Drugs and Court Cases. He brought the suit against the city. He lived in that city at the time, and he made $25,000. It was a slip and fall. Okay, so then he brought a personal injury case against the Errol Estate Property Owners Association, and he filed that in the circuit court in Orange County, Florida. And it was for the very same slip and fall. Hey, the guy got $25,000 in his first lawsuit. Why not just push it a little bit and see if he could get some more out of the Property Owners Association? Well, in order to do that, he had to have a deposition. Now, when you have a deposition, it is actually a formal legal proceeding, just like testifying in court. And the person is under the same legal obligation to tell the truth, which I think Mr. Halbig finds a very, very difficult thing to do. So, but he had to do this deposition. And the deposition was on May 18th, 2012. Now, when he had his slip and fall, he was 6 feet tall, weighed 276 pounds. And that was on January 26th of 2010. When he gave his deposition, he weighed the same. He was, of course, the same height. And this was on May 18th, 2012. Okay? Keep that date in mind. This was just a few months. Let's see. I think he started the his Child Safety Institute maybe 3-4 months later. Anyway, so he gave his deposition, and the lawyer's asking him questions. It's very difficult for Halbig to stay on topic. He just, well, you know how he is. Anyway, he said, and I quote, "I'm going up a hill. I'm tired, but that's where you want to really push it, because that's where you get your extra zip in there." 276 pounds? Okay. And he says, they wave at me. I wave back. Just as I pass them, there's a stop sign that's about to come up. Okay. So I'm looking at the stop sign up in front of me. All of a sudden comes a car behind me, and they're beeping the dadgum horn. scares the living heck out of me, because I don't know what they're doing. I got kids yelling. All of a sudden, when I turn, I'm turning left, I'm gone. The next thing I remember is I'm on the ground, and somebody is shaking me saying, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" Quote, unquote. Okay. Anyway, he lost the case, because the public sidewalks belong to the city of, in this case, Apopka. And so, of course, he lost the case, and the judge awarded Errol $3,954.30 in attorney fees on September 29th, 2016. It took him that long to get this case settled. I wonder if he's paid. He doesn't seem to pay. He has not paid C.W. Wade. I believe that he owes C.W. Wade $27,000. I know that he owes Shel Murray $1,000 because Shel Murray furnished him with those photos of on 2012 on Veterans Day. And so so that's where the donors' money's going. So all you people who donated money, that's where it's going. Anyway, during this deposition, he says that he saw doctors at the Jewett Orthopedic Clinic. He claims that he could not play tennis, golf, do yard work, or engage in other strenuous activities. At the time of his accident in 2012, he claims that he was jogging 2 miles a day. In the deposition, he stated, as I said before, he was 6 feet tall and weighed 276 pounds on January 26, 2010. And his height and weight were the same as when he gave the deposition. He was born August 10th, 1946. And I personally find it difficult to think that a man that's jogs 2 miles a day, would weigh that much. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. Okay, so let's establish a timeline, which I've done. He arrived in the United States in 1958. He graduated from the Avon Park High School, and he could barely speak English. He had a 1-point GPA. What got him through high school is football and baseball. From 1965 to 1966, he was in junior college for Florida State players who couldn't speak English. And this was in Coffeyville, Kansas. And he did not actually enroll at Florida State. He was naturalized in Abilene, Texas in 1968. But before that, he was in the Air Force from 1966 to 1970. He never left the country despite his claims of serving during the Vietnam War, despite his intimations that he was in the Vietnam War. He never left the country. He was, according to his DD-214, which is your discharge papers, he was a combative measures instructor. He didn't have a pilot's license. He was never a member of the Strategic Air Command, which he claimed he was. He was never a disastrous preparedness instructor and never a physical fitness specialist, as he has since claimed. From 1970 to 1973, he had a full scholarship, probably because of his sports activities. He received a Bachelor of Science in education, and at that time he was known as a womanizer. In 1973, he went to Lake Blantley High School in Seminole County. And per the deposition, let me read this to you. Well, in those days, in 1973, the fad was girls didn't wear bras, and they had very short skirts, and it seemed like nobody wanted to enforce the dress code. And for young coaches, in those days, you could get yourself in trouble if you were not careful. To me, I didn't want to lose my certification, so I became a state trooper, quote unquote. Okay. Well, we know what some coaches, well, I'm not going to say that because of speculation, but he left. Okay, from 1974 to 1976, he attended the academy in Tallahassee for 3.5 months and graduated with a certificate from CJST. He was assigned to Troop E in Miami, and a probationary period is 1 year. Okay, 1 year. A Florida State trooper does not conduct homicide investigations, as he claimed in Miami, or in any other county in Florida. Their function is as accident investigators and ticket writers. He voluntarily resigned because he claimed, so stupid, and I quote, "I was shot at too many times, and there's too many fights and broken noses, and I thought I could do a better job going back into prevention," unquote. Yet with all the shootings and fights, Halbig was never injured. And if that was if he was shot at, and if there were broken noses, don't you think he would have filed a claim or some sort of, trust me, he would have filed a court suit or a lawsuit. But he was never injured. Oh well, he just didn't get past the probationary period. So he said, well, gosh, I'll just go back to teaching. So from 1976 to 79, he was a teacher, a wrestling and football coach at Lake Weir High School. He was fired January 27, 1979 for lying and looking for another job. Lying? How big lying? Oh, my gosh. In 1979, he married Kathleen Audrey Smith. They later divorced and remarried in 1995 in Las Vegas. 1979 to 1981, he was Vanguard High School. He taught driver's ed. 1981 to 83, he went back to Lake Brantley. His memory, he said, was very faulty. He was also at Lake Weir High School. Notice that he jumped around a lot. Usually, I don't know. I've never been a teacher, but I think that the teachers kind of do stay at a school for a long time. I don't know. Anyway, 1983 to 86, Highlands County School Board. Teacher, he worked for the school board. Teacher and coach. Workers, oh, he filed a workers comp, okay, because he had a back injury. He fell 5 to 6 rows in the bleachers in the stadium at Sebring High School. Okay, then he went and he got a master's degree at Nova University, which is at a satellite campus in Gainesville, Florida, in 1988. Oh, okay. Take a quick break here. Be right back. All righty, welcome back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Let me just quickly answer another question from the chat room. Is there any video yet released of Adam Lanza approaching or at Sandy Hook Elementary School? No, because there were no video cameras at Sandy Hook Elementary School. The only monitoring system they had was you pressed a button at the door and told them who you were. The person at the front desk in the office would let you in. So the only evidence that Adam Lanza was at the Sandy Hook Elementary School were the 26 bodies that he left bleeding in 2 classrooms. Okay, let's get back to how big. Okay. So, he went back in 1986 to 1990 to Lake Brantley High School, and he taught American government, American history, and football. He was a football coach. I find it, if any of the listeners have read his emails, I just find it really difficult to believe that he was able to teach. I don't know. Okay, 1990 to 1993, Lyman High School. 1993 to 94, Lake Mary High School, assistant principal. 94 to 95, opened an alternative school called Project Excel. 1996 to 2012, he said he's an expert witness. And during that time, he handled, keep in mind that's 16 years, handled 13 cases during that time under his business, WK and Associates, which was only in business for 2 years. 1995 to 1999, he was director of school safety for the Seminole County School Board. In 2001, he established the National Institute for School and Workplace Safety, which was defunct in 2003. The attorney asked Halbig why he started and dismantled instead of just keeping one viable. He said he never thought of it. Okay, that's believable. 2002, he received a $500,000 contract from Anne Arundel County, Maryland, school superintendent, through school superintendent Dr. Eric Smith, former principal in Winter Park. 1994 to 2004, he was retired. 2004 to 2005, assistant principal Sanford Middle School. He was hurt in a ruckus with a student, hired an attorney, filed a workers' comp claim, received $10,000. 2005, admitted to having an affair with someone in Sebring. His wife found out, asked his doctor for some Cialis. Okay. I guess people can participate in recreational activities. Okay, 2005 to 2009. He's director of risk management, Lake County School Board. He filed a workers' comp because he stubbed his toe on a concrete block, parking block, was not reappointed by the new superintendent, Dr. Susan Moxley. He then filed a complaint due to the alleged harassment and hostile work environment with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. He dropped the claim as his wife asked him, inasmuch as the claim was against her employer. And I assume that she was probably making most of the money, and this caused marital discord, according to the deposition. 2009, he began to write a movie script and also functioned as an expert witness. January 2011 to June 2011, teacher at Sanford Middle School. May 2012, he said that his retirement benefits were $52,000 a year, Social Security about $20,000. He receives about $43,000 from other sources, claims to have a license as a claims adjuster. Now, please note that he did not claim, and he gave his deposition in May of 2012, he did not claim to be a nationally known school safety expert because he wasn't. He didn't become nationally known until Sandy Hook. Sandy Hook put him on the map. He did not claim to work as a customs agent. He did not claim to be a homicide investigator. He did not claim that the DOJ called him to evaluate Columbine, among some of the other claims. Now, he filed a suit after he broke up a fight. He got $10,000. He also had workers' compensation claim from the Highlands County School Board. He seems to file a lot of claims. He had an accident, a car accident in 2004-2005, in which he claimed a neck injury, and he received $12,000 from that car accident in his Ford Explorer. It didn't do a lot of damage. His wife was a passenger. She wasn't hurt, but apparently he suffered incredible neck damage. He couldn't turn his head to the right or to the left, and he filed a claim, of course. He claimed that he suffered a right knee injury when he fell in January 2010. He just complained about a lot of things. The attorney asked him if taking any type of medication on the day of the deposition would affect his memory. And he said, not that I can say, because I used to have great memory before the fall. The attorney responded, so you're blaming a lack of great memory now in the fall? Halbig answered, absolutely. And can't you just hear Halbig saying, absolutely. Then the attorney asked, okay, so my question is simply this. Are you taking any type of medication that would affect your memory here today? Halbig said no. Now, he was prescribed in July of 2009 the antidepressant Effexor. It's an antidepressant of a serotonin it's an SNRI. It's not as dangerous as the SSRIs, and it was to help his anger issues toward the new person that did not rehire him or reappoint him. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. It's Deanna, and we're talking about Wolfgang Halbig. Anyway, he said that he was very angry and about not being reappointed by Dr. Susan Moxley, and so the doctor put him on Effexor in 2009. And this really goes against his resume because he says that he implied that he was reappointed. And anyway, Effexor was not sufficient, and so he had his doctor prescribe something else. So the doctor put him on Cymbalta and Wellbutrin, and which are two very strong psychic drugs. And Halbig said that he did not like going to to the psychiatrist because he felt that as an athlete that he was strong enough to handle his own mental problems. well, I'll just keep my remarks to myself. Anyway, the attorney asked him why he was taking Wellbutrin. And it's very strange. He said he didn't know. Gosh, I don't know. And I just think that that's really kind of, you really need to know. And the attorney, as I said, asked him, and Halbig said, "I have no idea," quote unquote. And the attorney expressed surprise that Halbig did not inquire about the medication, Wellbutrin. The attorney asked Halbig what kinds of medications he was currently taking, and Halbig stated, "I take the same medication every day." Evidently, this was Cymbalta, Wellbutrin, and the attorney asked if the medication affected his memory, and Halbig answered that he used to have a great memory before the fall, and the attorney said, "Then you're blaming the lack of a good memory now in the fall." And that's when Halbig said, "Absolutely." Now, the doctor that he went to is a board certified in geriatric psychiatry and regular psychiatry. He has a special expertise in eight areas: in Alzheimer's disease, attention deficit disorder, bipolar disorder, manic depressive disorder, depression, depressive disorder, insomnia, schizophrenia, and sleep disorders. Now, withdrawing from Eli Lilly's Cymbalta because of its severity can cause its own diagnoses, and I have a link that you can follow along and see how to get off of this, or how it's recommended that you get off of this. But the discontinuance can be very severe and extend for weeks or even months, and may include extreme mood swings, anger, irritability, debilitating brain zaps, all kinds of terrible things. And in addition to taking these drugs, he was also taking painkillers, the painkillers that he was taking were very dangerous. He was taking all of this at the same time. Plus, he took a regular over-the-counter medication. So this seems to be a very over-medicated individual, and which is very dangerous. And he takes pain. He says he has headaches, other physical issues. It's destroyed his sex life with his wife. He takes tramadol, which is an opioid pain medication used to treat moderate to moderately severe pain. Let's see, tramadol. Well, he's just very highly medicated. So I guess the point of this is the fact that this deposition was given in May of 2012. And if he had the background that he said he did, well, he doesn't have it. He has lied about his background, and it has brought him thousands upon thousands of dollars. Enough money so that he can pay $1,000 for a picture of the 2012 Veterans Day celebration. Okay, now what should we cover? Anybody want to call into the program? It's 800-313-9443. Let's take a look. I'm sorry. Did not know. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were on. Werner, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Diana. You are picking on very hot pieces of iron. And I think it needs to be brought to the attention of the public. What kind of schemes and what kind of fraud and what kind of crimes are being covered up by the so-called psychiatric profession?
That's true. That is true.
when I heard that you were talking about this issue there, I just wrote down a few names, what I'd encountered over the last 42 years. First one, a Dr. Nayak. When the RCMP was covering up hate crimes, in my case, he comes from Myanmar or Burma, you know. Then the second one from Haiti, where I was being sent upon false accusations. The third one, when I was being put in the mental institution, his name was Dr. Alam, a young fellow from Bangladesh. The next one, a Dr. Kumar from India. The next one, a Dr. Vivelin from Lithuania. And then the next one, a Dr. Tahir from, I think, Pakistan. This was now a few years ago when I was in court. And I went to him and asked that any interaction with him would be recorded because I was representing myself in court and that there would be no misunderstanding to have the interaction with him being recorded because I represented myself. I intended to cross-examine him, you know, and he refused. The next one was a Dr. Akinmokun, a lady from Nigeria, who within 18 hours basically changed 180 degree around and cooked up a story, which was ultimately being thrown out because of the evidence I presented. And then last year I had a medical emergency where I basically had been had to be picked up by the ambulance and brought to the hospital because my heart stopped beating, or I stopped breathing, you know. But then I felt already better when we came to the hospital, and we had agreed with Renate. You know Renate? She has another horror story about the psychiatric profession. But we had agreed that I wouldn't take any medication, and I would stay in the hospital. And since I felt already better, I told that to that young woman doctor. And they had already a psychiatrist on standby, a Dr. Toshi from India. You know, and on the next gurney, there were standing two RCMP officers. And I figured, but anyway, I said to the doctor, I feel better and I want to go home. And so she sent this psychiatrist over. And I just told him, do you know Dr. Akinmokun? You know, and he went back to the doctor and Renate heard him talking. Oh, I don't want to get involved because, you know, Moncton is a relatively small community, about 100,000 people, and the word must have got around the way I made mincemeat out of his colleague in court, you know, that her all her assessment was being thrown out, you know. But basically, I got the impression that psychiatry is being used as a backup to cover up the inaction of police and to cover up crimes and protect the criminals. This is not just only in New Brunswick. It's happening in Nova Scotia. It happened in the New England states. And in the at the beginning of the program, you were talking about Connecticut. And a friend of mine from Connecticut there years ago, she had encountered the same situation. Basically, the psychiatrists are the last resort for a corrupt establishment to cover up all the crimes that have been committed.
Okay. Well, as I said, Big Pharma is a big business. U.S. government invests in an awful lot of money into Big Pharma. And the states cooperate through their Department of Health and Human Services. It is their job to do business with Big Pharma, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, that they have been instructed from the CDC that the Congress was not to investigate this or anything like that. So, yes, there's a lot going on behind the curtain, and it's pretty bad. So, thank you.
Jan, about 30 or 40 years ago, a neighbor who was very well read, very well educated, he pointed out to me that in years earlier the survey, and they surveyed young people that were coming to that were going to university, and they were being asked, "Would you be willing to kill someone for $50,000?" And according to that survey, 80% said yes. You know, when it couldn't be proven that they committed that crime.
Well, you don't have to take $3,000 or to even accept a bribe, because doctors have a license to kill. If you did, if you performed the same kind of service for your next door neighbor that a doctor does, you would get arrested because you don't have a license. The state, the American Medical Association, licenses a doctor. The state licenses a doctor. So they get to do that. You don't have to say, here's an extra $3,000 under the table. It's just part of their job. I hate to say that, but that is the truth. They have a license to do those things.
And there's another aspect, too. Many of those that come to university, they're very pissed off if they don't get a high-paying job. And if the government doesn't give them a job, they would be on the street and would create civil unrest and foment revolution. So rather,
well, that might be the case. I don't know.
No. As I say, who was pushing, communism, in the European countries and
sure.
North America? It was from the very same group of people.
Okay. Well, we're not talking about groups of people, or we're talking about, I've tried to personalize this and talk about the victims of Sandy Hook. And yeah. I know that there are other, oh, it's about guns, or it's about this, or it's about that, or it's this group of people that did it, and that group of people, but it's about the people. It's really about the victims, and these are the real victims. Halbig's not a victim. Fetzer's not a victim. James Tracy's not a victim. The victims were in Sandy Hook, Sandy Hook Elementary School. So I need to move on because we do have some other callers.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. Bye.
Hi.
Okay, let's take Murr in Wisconsin. Murr, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
I'm good.
It's the first time I've talked to you.
I know, we've emailed back and forth, but
yeah,
here we are.
You sound even better on the phone.
Oh, well, thank you.
You know,
bless your heart.
I learned a lot from you, especially like with Dr. Judy Wood. You know, I'm a little ashamed for the scoffing I did, because it was what everyone else was doing. But the more I researched that, the more I found, and the sphere isn't, expanded, the more I learned about directed energy weapons and different things. And, you know, I don't come from nowhere. I've lived a life and learned a lot of things, and I'm still learning. And I asked the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, to guide me, and never fails. He always does. And I'm happy for the, I never expected to be so happy being on my own, but it's made me sharper in those spiritual aspects. And your teaching about things that happened in World War II opened my eyes too, and I learned from that. And that sphere keeps expanding. But this aspect, this Sandy Hook, I totally disagree with your findings. My
research—they're not my findings.
This is your research, and this is
no, it's not mine. It isn't my research.
It is your research. This is what you were telling us. The research,
okay.
I've looked into what you say, and I've looked into what many others say, and it's not the same thing. And it's all right. We don't have to agree with each other. We don't agree
Absolutely.
With ourselves from formally, right? You didn't agree with what you first thought about this. And maybe you'll change again. We all keep changing because we need to. But we need to not impugn each other's characters and go on for 20 minutes about a man's history. How is that relevant to what you're talking about, really?
How is it relevant? Is because
I mean,
didn't
you just fall down recently?
As I said before, when you are looking at somebody's what they've said and what they claim to have to be,
about the circumstances of their life. I would never laugh about the circumstances
I know,
of your life.
You're probably right.
When you had Lori Handrahan on, that was very impressive, and the information she gave. But at the very end, she said, it's the white men. Now, why did she put that little knife in our back? Why did she do that? And right away, it made me think about another one named Rebecca Gompert. And she's an abortionist, right?
You ask a question. Let me answer it. Because according to the research that she has done, most of the people who were arrested for the crime that she was talking about were white, ordinary people. It wasn't.
I was checking.
We do have to go to a break. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and let me just address what our friend Murr said. How big? Yes, I probably should not laugh. I guess that's my weakness of character. However, how big is a liar? His lying about his background, his constant harassment of people who have lost children, his lawsuits against people who have lost children. This is not just benign behavior. This is causing people to have to move for fear of their lives. It has caused people to use fake names. People have desecrated the graves of these children. What he is doing is not benign behavior. He is responsible for a lot of people doing a lot of really bad things. And I'm not too sorry that I'm calling him out on it. And I will continue to call him out on it because he is a fraud. His background, he has lied about his background. When he developed the Children's Safety Institute, he shut that institute down 3 days after I interviewed him on March 3rd, 2014. He shut it down. And when he created that institute, two of the people that he used for referrals were already previously dead. He said that his office was implying that he had this wonderful office. It turned out to be the UPS office, a mailbox at the UPS office. He is a liar. Am I going to believe anything he says with all the damage and the hatred that he is causing? Heavens no. I will not stop. I will not stop. I will continue to be objective. It takes objectivity to look at both sides. If people want to spend their time at YouTube University and look at YouTube videos and listen to people who appeal to emotion, lie about their backgrounds, lie about their experience, then that's their decision. But I will not back down. I am not a liar. Yes, I did have a slip and fall. I didn't sue anybody. I got up and I took care of myself. Okay? That is what I did. So if I've offended somebody, well, I'm sorry. I guess that's just me. Sometimes I'm offensive. But I do not lie. And I am objective. I do look at both sides. Both sides. If all I did was listen to the YouTube videos and all the others, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it to begin with because I saw the deception. If they're going to fabricate one thing and fabricate dozens and dozens and dozens of things, I'm sorry. That's just the way I feel, and I'm not backing down. When people lie, they deserve to be called out on it when it hurts other people, when they're harassing little children, when they're harassing children, that they're saying, oh, this child used, the words that they're using against these children are just terrible. This is dangerous. And I'm not stopping, okay? Hey, thanks for joining me today. Take care. Bye-bye.